Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Ben Standing is with us. He is with us every Monday and Friday at Ben Standing on X on Twitter. Ben Standing has a podcast called Last Man Standing, and he writes for The Athletic. I know you want to talk more about the NBA Finals, and we will get to some Washington football team news, including something Kevin Durant said about his favorite football team. I'll start with, if Halliburton doesn't get hurt, what do you think happens last night?
You know, I mean, look, obviously you don't know. If Indiana had gotten that game to the fourth quarter, tight game, from what we have seen, I would like their chances for sure against the Oklahoma City team that's the youngest in the league and that has shown moments of being, not so serious or not being mature enough, particularly game six when they just get walloped from the start with the everything on the line. And, other than SGA, the other guys all felt like, they needed momentum on their side to be able to step up in the big moments. On the other hand, the game that played out last night that was still basically tied, give or take, at halftime, even though Halliburton was out, I was like, the first 5 minutes of the second half is going to dictate who wins this game. If the Thunder come out and do what they have done all year, dominate on defense, create turnovers, it would turn those into fast breaks, and they get like a 10-point lead, I don't know that Indiana has enough to come back this time without Halliburton. And essentially, that's the way it played out. So, I'd like to think that Indiana would have had a chance to win, but, I don't know. I don't want to be like, say, I don't know what to tell you, but like, yeah, I kind of don't know what to say. The same result could have happened in the exact same way, but obviously Indiana's chances for success would have been much greater.
Yeah, I mean, before the game, I gave Indiana a shot. I mean, I did a 180 on this series in the middle of it. I loved Oklahoma City big and easy, like all the odds makers did before the series began. Even in game one, with the defense they threw on Indiana and the stunning comeback, I still thought they had a shot to win the series in short order. After game three, I'm like, this thing's going seven. I mean, these two teams are dead even. It's a shame, really, that we didn't get to see. Game one was memorable, but really the series as a whole, even though I would put it up there with some of the best defense, Indiana played great defense too, but Oklahoma City's defense throughout these last 2 months at times was as good as it gets. I mean, as good as it gets in basketball at any level. I mean, it was just so good. And last night it took the game over again, as it did, at times in game four, game five, game one. But there wasn't, there wasn't a signature game, maybe game one, but this, I think, will end up being a largely forgotten NBA Finals. The market sizes, the complaints about that. I enjoyed it, but I wanted a close game. I wanted a game seven filled with drama. We didn't get it after the injury.
Yeah, no, I think 100%. Look, NBA Finals, more than the other sports, tend to be about narratives and storylines. If LeBron's in it, he's chasing Jordan, if somebody's trying to break through for their first one or they're trying to win, again and again. And these are the things, even more recently, we've had guys like Giannis and Jokic and now, I guess, SGA to a degree, sort of win their first one. I just don't think SGA is yet at that level of, all caps, big name star compared to the other guys. But when you don't have those storylines, and neither team has like dynamic player, that's just the reality. But when you don't have that, you need great games and great moments. And there were some great moments, but like you said, not necessarily great games. And the fact that game seven, unfortunately, ended the way that it did. Yeah, I'm with you. It's going to go down as, for basketball heads, a really fun one to remember. But for the most part, it's going to be forgotten. And by the way, like, I was getting this discussion with a mutual friend of ours. OKC, they won the title. That is fantastic. Good for them. First one for their franchise. Seattle doesn't count. All that stuff. Kudos to them. What a great year, and their future is incredibly bright. But considering the hype going into the not just the finals but the playoffs, I mean, it's a little bit of a disappointing run, even though they won the title. To go to Game 7 twice in these playoffs and against teams that were limited because of, in this case, injuries at the very end, but the Denver series injuries overall, it wasn't the most impressive showing for the team that won, 68 games in the regular season. They didn't look like an all-time great team, which is what they was sort of on the line for them.
Yeah.
Like if they had come out and just blitzed Indiana, they are an all-time team. Now they were a team that won the title. We'll see what happens. But, again, to the point of being forgotten, if they don't turn this into a dynasty, it's going to be forgotten, relatively speaking.
When the playoffs started, were they the favorites to win the whole thing, or was Boston?
I don't remember the exact odds. I mean,
I don't either. But what I'm getting at is I didn't enter the postseason recognizing their regular season as, well, this is, going to be an all-time run. I think once they, once I saw them, look, they were playing a Memphis team and then a Memphis team that was injured. They played the Denver series was a phenomenal series. And at times, even during that series in the games they lost, I'm like, they could have won. Same thing with the games Denver lost. They could have won except for Game 7. But the dismantling of Minnesota was like, I just thought that going into the finals, I was expecting greatness and a more impressive display, but I don't think I felt that way before the postseason started.
Well, when you win 68 games,
I understand that, but that doesn't mean anything with respect to odds makers.
Yeah, I'm talking just sort of legacy and all that. The point was the assumption was that they were, I don't know what the odds makers were saying, but that they were viewed as definitive favorite in the West, a conference that is absolutely loaded, and they were still viewed as a pretty big favorite out there, and then obviously we get to the finals, you see who you're playing. So yeah, I just think like they had the opportunity for this season to go down as one of the all-time great seasons, and again, the Thunder fans won't give a crap about legacy or any of that stuff, but in terms of like you're saying, with the series as a whole, in terms of being memorable,
it wasn't
this title wasn't. Now again, if this is the start of a dynasty and they win 3 out of 4 titles in 3 and 4 years, okay, well then it'll be looked at as the start. But for now, the way they couldn't put Indiana away is hurts the legacy a little bit.
Yeah, and at the same time, they were down 2-1 and down big in Game 4, and it looked like it was on the verge of teetering and maybe even crumbling all over them, and they ended up winning 3 of the final 4. Halliburton's, missing Game 7, obviously, was a big deal. You said something about SGA that I talked about earlier, too. Like, you're seeing a lot written about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, fourth player in NBA history after, Kareem and Michael and Shaq, to win a scoring title, win the MVP of the regular season, and win the MVP of the finals while also winning a championship. He's not in that category yet. I don't even think he's the best player in the game, but I do think he is really, like, special. I think they're not well coached offensively. I think that you saw the difference between Carlisle and Dagnall offensively anyway. I think they were very well coached defensively. And I think some of that needs to change for them to really get on a run. He's a top 5 player in the game, but there's no way I'm taking him over Jokic. There's no way I'm taking him over Giannis.
An analogy, Kevin, that I think about, and this is for the old heads out there, when Larry Holmes was a heavyweight champion, he was a really good boxer and he was a really good heavyweight champion, except that nobody viewed him as being that impressive because he came in between the Muhammad Ali, when Muhammad Ali era was kind of ending, and then he wasn't facing anybody that was particular. Before Tyson, he wasn't facing anybody particularly impressive. It was considered to be a down time. So he always gets a bit, like, somebody has to win every year. This is how this works, right? Somebody has to win, and he was the one that was winning. In tennis, you know, there was that gap between when American tennis with John McEnroe and Jimmy Connors were kings, and then later it became Sampras and Agassi. But in between, people forget, like, Jim Courier won a few titles, except that nobody ever looked at Jim Courier as, like, the next thing. He was just the thing at the moment because he was good, but he didn't have the all-time tools. And I feel like that's where we're at with SGA. The NBA is in this weird lull right now where LeBron and Curry and Durant are still kind of the faces of the league, but we all understand their days are getting close to the finish line, and there's this gap in between. It's why how much of the conversation this year in the league was about who's the face of the league, you know, all this nonsense. But the point was that there isn't an obvious person right now. There isn't an obvious guy. So SGA, again, great year, an incredible run. He does all these things, but I don't know that we're looking at him as the next thing. We're looking at him as the thing that just happened, but not the next thing. And that's kind of where I feel like I'm waiting to see where the NBA goes next. It may be the Thunder because they have a very young team with a million assets to get better, but we'll see. You know, you never know how these things go, and they need. I think we're in a lull right now. Is sort of my point. A little bit of a down period. We'll see where this goes. But that's why it doesn't feel. Yeah, it was good. Good for them. Good for him. But I don't know. I'm not feeling like this is a legacy moment.
Yeah, but I think that it could come. I think he's that talented. I, by the way, love his game and I love him. I think he would benefit from, you know, more structure offensively this time of year, especially. And yet, you know, the numbers were incredible, although he was 8 of 27 last night. And he took some horrendous shots last night in the game. It's a weird period in general. You know, the fact that we've had 7 consecutive champions and they're all unique in 7 consecutive years. You know, that's crazy. We've never had that before. You know, with Toronto, Lakers, Bucks, Warriors, Nuggets, Celtics, Oklahoma City. I did think in watching this series and even watching last night, I wonder what a healthy Boston would have done against Oklahoma City. I actually think they would have won a best of 7. And then we would have looked at it as, all right, Oklahoma City took that next step, actually took 2 steps, and next year will be their year or the year after. I mean, they skipped a couple of steps when we're talking about how typically NBA champions, the evolution of an NBA champion. They got there a lot faster. They're the youngest team since 77. To win the title. It's been an older player league for a while now.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, look, I think the Celtics, well, they were going to lose that series to the Knicks before Tatum got hurt. And I know that Kristaps Porzingis was out, but, you know, unfortunately he's always out. So I don't think the Celtics were getting it done this year. They just looked a little bit off, whether they didn't have the same hunger, you know, after winning a title, who's to say. But look, the East in the NBA was already the little brother by a mile to the West, and that was before Tatum and Lillard and Halliburton suffered these season-ending Achilles injuries that will probably cost all 3 of them or at least 2 of them much of next year. And the East is going to be an absolute mess because there won't be, you know, who knows what's going to happen. Maybe Cleveland, after winning 60 games and then stumbling in the playoffs, figure some things out. I'm not convinced of that. So we'll see how that goes. I think it's just going to continue to add to the weird time that the NBA is in. That's why it was such a bummer that Cooper Flagg didn't at least get to the East, let alone obviously landing here. But yeah, the NBA is in a very odd time right now. And, OKC is positioned to do great things. Of course, the team that was the second number 2 seed was also, you know, too young, didn't have enough offense. And then yesterday they go out and get Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
So, you know, even right this minute, I don't know that I'm going to say OKC is like the runaway favorite. I think Houston is going to be pretty interesting, and that doesn't even factor in, you know, all the other teams out there that are pretty fun. So
I will say this in wrapping it up, although I do want to I want to ask you about the Durant trade. These NBA playoffs, which last 2 months, night in and night out, it is entertaining. The effort, the competitive level, the defense, you know, and we've seen in recent years teams get much more physical. You know, we went from that era of, you know, 79, 78, Pistons, Nets, etc. They eliminated the hand-checking rule. They made the game more free-flowing. And now, basically, you just have so many players that are almost impossible to guard, no matter what they allow you to get away with. But we saw 2 months, we saw some really good basketball games, a couple of very good series. But I'll tell you what, nothing, and I say this every single year because it's so obvious to anybody that pays attention to both. There is no greater disparity in regular season and postseason products than the NBA. The regular season is dreadful. There's no real urgency. There's no defense compared to what you see in the postseason. And then it's like they are scratching and clawing for, you know, water in a desert for 2 months. And it's entertaining to watch, even though we didn't get, you know, a memorable finals, even with a seventh game. You go back, some of those Knicks comebacks against the Celtics, some of those Knicks-Pistons games early on were incredible. The Pacers-Knicks series was insane. And then in the West, I mean, the Rockets-Warriors was unbelievable for that series. Thunder-Nuggets was a great series. You just had some great games, and it was a changing of the guard, no doubt. You know, no LeBron, no Steph, you know, moving on. Jokic got beat with a team that was thin bench-wise and got injured during their series. I think actually, and I talked to Legler about this the other day, maybe the most impressive thing about these entire playoffs, Indiana was one. Okay, two was Jokic literally almost carrying his team to an upset over OKC with no bench and with two key injuries to Porter Jr. and then to Gordon late in that series. I still think Jokic right now, if you give me, you know, the chance to draft any player in the league, I'm drafting him first.
Yeah,
who would you pick?
No, I would pick Jokic. I don't even have much debate over that. But you're right. I mean, yeah, the regular season, I don't know what they do to fix it. You know, LeBron the other day made the ridiculous comment that he doesn't understand ring culture, even though he's been a massive supplier of the hype of ring culture. And because I think so much of this younger generation looks up to a guy like LeBron, the moves that he's made, I think, has signaled what matters is getting the ring. The regular season doesn't matter, right? And so when you have, I mean, other than just getting in, even seeding, it's like, all right, we'll figure it out. So when you have that mentality, I think it changes how you perform. The fact that OKC was basically a college age team is why I think they played hard all the time, because they're too young to know better, sort of. But, like, you know, in general, the regular season has been diminished because it has been such an emphasis on just getting the ring. And you know, that's just how American sports are to a degree, but North American sports, but like, it has gotten, I think, progressively more that way in the NBA the last few years.
Yeah, it is. And at the same time, wouldn't Indiana have loved Game 7 at home last night? Although they weren't anywhere near 68 wins. All right, what did you... The one thing that I was concerned about, God, the ESPN pregame, that whole thing is just a train wreck that finally is over. We won't have to watch Stephen A. In a pregame or a halftime setting anymore. Scott, by the way, and I mean, I know he has been one of my closest friends for 30 plus years, but what he does with Legler and his interviews is phenomenal. It's the best thing that, you know, that we watched in the finals. I was afraid with the trade happening on the same day that Game 7 happened that was going to be what we talked about, because it's always about, you know, the drama and the true stars, and KD's one of them. We didn't get as much as I thought we would get, but what did you think of the trade?
Yeah, I think, look, I think for Houston, you know, it was a great move. They didn't give up really any of their higher ranked assets. I mean, the 10th pick in this draft is, you know, who knows? Well, it's something, but Jalen Green, who, you know, was what, the second pick of the draft a few years ago. But his stars faded a lot. You know, really bad playoff series. He's getting paid a lot of money now. But okay, there's at least, you know, losing him is not going to be a problem. Houston was really good on defense, a lot of energy. They couldn't shoot. And they didn't have, like, a veteran guy to go to. And now you have Kevin Durant, who's, you know, other than Steph Curry, might be the best shooter of all time. And he's still putting up, you know, 26, 27 points a game, even at 37. So I think for Houston, it was a great deal. They didn't give up much. I think Phoenix, look, once it was telegraphed that they were going to have to move Durant, I don't know why people thought they were going to get good offers. And I think they got about as good as they could get. You know, they got to hope Jalen Green
got better than what the Lakers, what the Mavs got for Doncic.
Well, you know, it depends how you look at it. I mean, Anthony Davis is obviously a top 10 player. But yeah, I mean, they didn't get, it's not a great trade for Phoenix. And this is more of an indictment of everything they have done the last two or three years under this new Jewish owner, Matt Ishbia. But yeah, I don't, they did what they had to do. They have more work to do by a lot. But, yeah, I think the Durant trade puts Houston, like I said, maybe it's not right there with OKC, but I don't think it's that far apart. They were a two seed last year and basically had no real offense, and now you have Kevin Durant. So that seems like a pretty good move to me.
I actually think I think next year Houston's legit right there with OKC in the West. And we'll see what Denver does with their roster here in the offseason. But that's going to be – it's the one thing they just couldn't do when it mattered, with the exception of Thompson, who really ended up being the guy that could get them buckets in that series against Golden State. But I think Houston is right there. I think they're well coached, too. I think OKC's got one issue. They got to fix. They've got to become a better offensive team in the half court when the game slows down. And their defense isn't generating all of their offense, which it did last night, and they won a lot of games that way. But they're going to have to win some games when the game truly slows down in the postseason with much better half-court offense. And I think if they find somebody to help them with that, I think SGA blossoms even more as an offensive player. Too many times he was facing just a defense waiting for him with nothing planned, nothing structured. And I think a better offensively coached team with his skill level could make him an even better offensive player. We'll see if OKC does that. But if I'm Houston, Kevin Durant has still played at a very high level offensively. It's exactly what they were missing in that postseason. All right. The draft is Wednesday night and Thursday night. I did read something over the weekend. The Wizards were looking to try to trade up, but apparently there are no interested parties. If they stay where they are, who do you want them to pick?
I'm not in love. It's always fun to be in love with somebody at this point. I don't just mean the number one guy, but just somebody whose skill set you just really like. I have not studied this draft that intensely. But, you know, Trey Johnson from Texas is interesting. Yeah. He's a guy that's, you know, an offensive threat. And of the young pieces Washington has, none of them are necessarily that type of player. I know Ace Bailey is the hot topic, and I've heard people say there's no way the Wizards would let him go if he gets to six. I don't know. It just depends on – he's an ultimate, you know, wild card player. The highlights are fantastic. The other plays are just head-scratching in terms of decision-making and, you know, this whole thing where he's not working out for teams. You know, he's the one who picks his – this is his first big decision. He picks his agent, and this seems very odd. So I have a lot of questions about him. And I know people say the Wizards have got to get a guy with superstar upside. Yes, but not really. Like, sure, you can just build a team, have really good young players, and then when you have assets, go out and bring in – that veteran piece, you know, sort of akin to what Houston kind of just did, although they were more advanced for sure. But like, you don't have to reach here. They still need to get assets and build their team up. And that's why, you know, I don't think you have to go take Ace Bailey. So Trey Johnson will be fun. I think the center Malawat from Duke, if they think he's got, you know, real interior defense potential, then he could be somebody you move. Sar to me kind of looks more like a four anyway, because he's not, doesn't look like he's going to be much of a rebounder. So, yeah, I think those would be two guys for me that would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so hard. You know, we just saw, you know, in three of the last four or five, you know, champions, guys taken after the top 10, you know, SGA, Giannis, Jokic, and you just don't know. Teams don't know. This is the biggest crapshoot like it is in the NFL in many ways. I'm not an Ace Bailey fan. I've already talked about that. I saw a game here in College Park in which he completely tapped out after Derek Queen dominated him. And he left and scored 4 points and begged out of the game for being sick. I also saw him look really, really good. But... you know, in moments like that, that sort of sticks when you see a guy completely bail on his team in a game. But he's also 18 years old, so who knows what he's going to be like as an adult. I mean, that's the thing. These guys are so young, you don't know what they'll be like 4 and 5 and 6 years down the road. I love Derek Queen. I think he's going to be a really good NBA player. The latest mocks have him falling and falling. I saw a mock this morning on ESPN that's got Oklahoma City at 15 taking Derek Queen and him going to the defending champions. But the Wizards have to end up making one of these many picks over the next couple of years turn into a great player, or at least give him the opportunity to trade for one. Yeah, I mean, they get three more chances.
By the way, like the real challenge here is, like, you're drafting all these, you know, one-and-done kids. I know this has been going on for a few years, but to the point we had earlier about this maybe lull right now in the NBA, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that when these kids are coming in, there is no storyline at all. Cooper Flagg is a rare one, because we started talking about him before he, you know, a year before he even got to college, and then he played, you know, scrimmages against the pros and looked good. None of these guys have a storyline. And so that, like, all, you know, you just lose that. And, you know, if you're, you know, unless a guy comes in and is just great out of the bat, you know, from the start, which is not common, then, yeah, it's just, oh, eventually somebody turns up and, okay, sure. But, like, that is such a problem for the NBA as well. And, again, that's why most of the guys who are also – there's also the AAU aspect. The better players in the league are all international right now, in terms of the, you know, Jokic and Giannis and SGA, and, you know, it's not the Americans, and that's a whole other rub, for sure. But part of why this is a problem. Did you want to discuss the Durant Parsons thing before I go, or no?
Oh yeah, I did. I did. Thanks for producing the show. No, what I think I was going to say something just about, you know, Risashe. I mean, Wembanyama's different, Flag's different, but, you know, the Banqueros and even the Cade Cunninghams, and both of those players have turned into really good players. I think the guy, Wembanyama and Zion Williamson in, like, the last 10 years were brands coming into the league, but no one else is, and that's, you know, that's what college sports did. That was always, to me, the underrated part of the value equation for both the leagues and the athletes themselves, is that college sports for a couple of years ended up being such a massive marketing platform for both player and league. I did want to play. This was Kevin Durant at this Fanatics fest yesterday. I guess he found out about the trade while he was on stage, but then he was asked by Kay Adams, I believe, from the NFL Network, something about his favorite football team, that team being Washington. Here's what he said.
What is happening? Micah Parsons was just here. Do you want to recruit him to the Commanders? Yeah. Micah, get on in here.
I think Micah,
he's not signed to the Cowboys.
I think he will be a Commander at some point in his career.
When?
I would say 2 years from now.
Yo, I only rock with Dan Quinn, you know what I mean? Anybody else?
Exactly. That's all he need to rock with.
My neck hurts. You guys are too tall. I can't handle it.
So, yeah, let me just tell you, Micah Parsons, more likely than not, is going to sign a massive all-time defensive player deal before the season starts to stay with the Cowboys for many years. That would be my guess. Yeah, he loves Dan Quinn. Everybody loves Dan Quinn, but he's not coming to Washington. Do you disagree?
Well, I mean, obviously, I can't say that it's, you know, it's going to happen. The contract will be interesting. You know, typically an NFL player, because of the nature of the sport where you, you know, the injuries happen and you, you know, your career can be over like that and the lack of guaranteed money, relatively speaking, he'll get plenty. But in general, you know, it leads to, if you can get, take the longest contract you can get. But there is also the idea, and we see it at some of the maybe skill positions, of saying, let me take a shorter deal so I can get another bite at the apple. He's 26 right now. You know, obviously he and Dallas have not gotten a deal done. I don't know what the holdup is. Is there a world where Micah Parsons and his agent say, hey, we want a smaller deal. I mean, not in terms of, you know, money, but in terms of years. So I can get another bite of the apple. He's 26. If that's the case, Dan Quinn could be appealing.
Not in 2 years, though. Said,
well, you know, I don't know how the structure will go. I mean, I would doubt it. Like I said, I really doubt it. But, you know, the Dan Quinn part of his injury, he's praised Dan Quinn up and down a ton. And, you know, I'm sure that guy wants to win if Dallas is, you know, continues to sort of, you know, not get their stuff in order. Maybe he gets frustrated, but we'll see. If he signs a 5-year deal, then obviously all bets are off. But if he signs a shorter term deal, we'll see.
What was the deal that, how many years was the Myles Garrett deal that just happened?
Maybe your guy Max can look up. I don't remember, but I think it was like,
I think it was a longer
term one.
4-year contract extension.
Yeah. And that was at 40 a year, right, Max?
Correct.
Yeah. That's what Parsons is looking for, I think. I mean, he's looking for $200 million, 5 years, 4 years, 160. He's looking for a Myles Garrett deal. Sure. I don't know. Maybe this is the one that Jerry doesn't do the night before the season opens, getting the worst possible deal after everybody else has signed their deals. But I would bet that Parsons ends up with, you know, at least a 3-year deal. I can't imagine him being here in 2 years. But who knows? Stranger things have happened.
It's a different position he plays than Terry McLaurin, but we're having the discussion about, is it possible Washington doesn't value McLaurin at the value McLaurin thinks he should be getting because he's going to be 30 this year. Defensive lineman age a little bit better. Myles Garrett, I believe, yes. Right? Isn't he over 30? Like those guys get paid. But at the same point, if you do it for less than 5 years, 4 or 5 years, you can get another deal before 30. So I think that's always an interesting age number for how guys look in terms of, hey, I want to get paid another time beyond this one. And if he's, you know,
look, there may be some things with Micah Parsons that the Cowboys are leery of, and I'm not talking about on the field play. So we'll see. There's been that talk all along, but he's too talented, I think, for Dallas to not lock up. Myles Garrett, by the way, 29 years old, signed. Yeah, Max was right. 4 years, $40 million, 160. Practically guaranteed $125 million. Wow. That was a deal for sure. All right. Anything else? Did you want to say anything about Fred Smith?
Obviously, you know, best to his family, obviously, a loss for them. The FedEx part of it, I mean, it's an incredible undertaking that he did to bring that. But in terms of here, you know, obviously, not only was he a longtime minority partner in the Dan Snyder ownership group, but he was, you know, one of those guys, the minority partners, who, you know, really got the ball rolling towards Dan Snyder eventually having to sell this team by, filing lawsuits against Snyder for, you know, the debates over payments that were not being made. And then that led to, you know, bringing up the nickname. And that led to the Redskins being removed. And then, you know, you get to, you know, 3 and 4 years later, and then they sell the team. You know, he definitely had he and the other minority partners had a big factor in that happening. And I know a lot of the fans are, like, sort of blaming him for the name changing. I guess the question is, you know, would you rather have the name and Snyder still here or the other way around? To me, it would be a relative no-brainer to get rid of Snyder. But yeah, he obviously had a huge factor in all that. And, you know, I that's not going to be his legacy overall for his life, but for here locally, I think that's obviously going to be how he's remembered. I would think for the better, but, you know, for some people may disagree.
Look, I said this earlier in the show because I saw a lot of this and a lot of it was sent to me about Fred Smith's legacy for Skins fans. I don't think there's any doubt that he was more vindictive in the moment in July of 2020 than all of a sudden, you know, virtuous. But Snyder brought that on. Snyder put that minority group into a position where they were so angry and felt so taken advantage of and so lied to that they were out for blood. That was Snyder's doing that created that environment, along with, you know, a very unique situation in the summer of 2020 overall when it came to, you know, the canceling of, you know, longstanding brands. Yeah, there's no doubt that he took advantage of it, and it was, how about, you know, really, you're not going to provide me with dividend payments or, you know, updated information as to why you borrowed $55 million for something? Well, watch this. Just like Shar did with that Indian company that started that smear campaign that tied Snyder to drug trafficking and Jeffrey Epstein. They were not happy with the owner, but that was the owner's fault, not their fault.
And you know, to go back to the Wayback Machine, I read something about his passing that I had forgotten about, that, you know, Dan Snyder ended up being the owner because he was part of the Howard Milstein group.
Right.
And then when Milstein fell out, Snyder was able to convince everybody, despite his age, that, you know, pick him as the guy. If that had not happened, it looked like Fred Smith was probably with his group, probably the second group in line. So, you know.
Well, look, before Fred Smith got bought out by Snyder, I think in the couple of years as things really started to sour, I wouldn't be surprised if Fred Smith even in that moment said, we'll buy the whole thing. But Snyder wasn't selling the whole thing at that point. He just didn't want to be with Dan anymore. All right, I got to roll. Thanks. Talk to you later.
Awesome. See ya.
Ben Standing, everybody. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and theteam980.com.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
So I got this the other day from Sam21 and for all. Sam21 and for all. And I've gotten a lot of this over the last couple of weeks as it relates to Terry McLaurin. I think we talked about this maybe 2 weeks ago. But Sam21, I'll shorten it up, writes, I swear on my kids, Kevin, that if Adam Peters doesn't get Terry in the fold, I'm out on this team. He's an all-time Redskins / Commander. You don't let someone like that leave and call your culture cured of Snyder. So, this is not the first time we've talked about this. Some of you are really hell-bent on the idea that if they don't sign Terry to a contract extension, it's not what they've made it out to be. The culture isn't that much changed. First of all, the idea that you'd be out on your team, Sam21, if they decided that Terry wasn't worth what he's asking for is unbelievable. I mean, if you weren't out many years ago, all of the opportunities and this would send you packing after the season they had, I don't get that. Look, I think there is a lot of benefit of the doubt. I was in benefit of the doubt mode basically the moment Josh Harris, Mitch Rales, Magic Johnson, Mark Ein, all 20-plus new owners took over, and definitely in benefit of the doubt mode when they hired the hottest GM candidate on the market. They hired a very good and experienced head coach who filled out the staff with a lot of really good coaches and experienced coaches. And I said at the time, look, this may be naive, but after all of these years of not being able to give anybody the benefit of the doubt because they clearly hadn't earned it, I'm going to just sit back and see what they do. And you got to give it some time because it is a major rebuild. Like, they had to tear it down to the studs to start rebuilding this thing. And I was going to give it a few years before I came up and said, yeah, this is not the group. Adam Peters was not a good hire. Dan Quinn wasn't a good hire. Josh Harris and these guys don't really know what they're doing. But I was all in for benefit of the doubt. Okay, maybe that was a bit early for benefit of the doubt, but Sam 21, how could you possibly, after last year, not be in at least some shred of benefit of the doubt mode? You know, you don't trust them after what they proved last year to handle in a professional way that's both good for the franchise and also good for the player, a contract extension for a veteran player? Come on, man. I mean, I don't know. The idea that this would be a deal killer for any of you is beyond me. You hung in there for all those years, and now after a season that produced the most joy you've had in decades, you're going to let it all go to hell in a handbucket because they don't extend Terry McLaurin? You know, also, by the way, this is really important to point out for those of you that have similar feelings. He can't leave. He's not a free agent. He's got a year left on his contract. He's not going anywhere. You know, I guess they could trade him. That seems like a very, very major league long shot. That would be their choice, you know, not his choice. He can't leave them. He's under contract. He's not going to hold out in 2025 at 30 years old, only to be in the same situation when next year ends because his contract didn't accrue. The realistic worst case is that he plays in 2025 on the final year of his deal without an extension. I don't think that's going to happen, you know, but I guess that is in play because the team may be far apart. They may believe Terry's asking for too much. They see Terry as older, entering his older years, very important. They want him back, but not worth $33, $34 million a year. Maybe worth $28 to $29 to $30 million a year. And they don't want to set a precedent of doing a bad deal. You know, they want a fair deal. Maybe they don't. That's where the rub is. The realistic worst case is that he just plays 2025 on the final year of his deal. But he can't leave. I think the deal gets done between now and the beginning of camp. That's my guess. I don't know anything. It's my guess. But if it doesn't get done, I just can't imagine taking a side so strongly that it would impact my current enjoyment of this team. I might disagree with how the contract negotiations go and if they don't get a deal done with him, if we find out that he was just asking for, say, $30 million a year for 3 years, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood, and they didn't think he was worth that, I might disagree with it, but they've built up equity with me, trust equity. I trust them. And the culture they've created, you know, maybe it's not here to last forever, but I don't think not signing Terry is going to impact it that much. I don't think the rest of the team is going to say, whoa, you treated him so badly. Culture changes today. Now, they've got the right people in that building for now. Maybe that'll change in the coming years. But I don't think if he doesn't get a long-term deal done that it is going to be a culture changer for the franchise. I think the preference, because he's so well-liked and so well-respected, and he's one of their leaders, and oh, by the way, he's really good coming off his best season, the preference would be for everybody that they take care of him and he gets a long-term deal and he's happy with it and they're happy with it. But these are the way contract negotiations go. Sometimes they don't go smoothly. But I just can't imagine being out after last year because they don't get a long-term deal done with Terry. Also, Sam, to be fair, Terry's not an all-time Redskin commander yet. I know this is going to piss some of you off. He could become that guy in a few years. You know, currently he is fifth on the franchise's list for all-time receptions, sixth in yards, eighth in touchdowns. There's nobody on the planet that would say the fifth all-time leading pass catcher receptions-wise, sixth in yards, eighth in touchdowns, is an all-time franchise player. Okay, that's just not on any all-time franchise list. Now, he's heading in the right direction. If he has another two seasons like the season he had last year, by the way, combine it with another, you know, couple of playoff wins and a really good season, maybe a Super Bowl trip or a Super Bowl win, now we're talking about all-time. He had 82 catches last year for 1,096 yards and 13 touchdowns. If he goes two more years with those identical numbers, and by the way, it's part of a winning team, he would be third on the all-time receptions list behind Art Monk and Charlie Taylor. He would be fourth all-time in yards behind Monk and Taylor. And he'd be third all-time in touchdown receptions behind Taylor, who's one, Monk, who's two. Taylor, by the way, has 79 all-time touchdown receptions, okay? Terry's only got 38 right now. I mean, come on, people. Monk's got 888 career catches. Terry's got 460. He's basically got half the yards Monk has in his career. Again, two more years like the year he just had, he moves up significantly on these lists, and he etches his name on the list of the greatest receivers to ever play for this franchise with just a few more seasons. And if he does this for another three or four, he's not going to catch Taylor. He's not going to catch Monk on catches or yards. But he could move into the number two spot and definitely into the number three spot on all those lists. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how many of you are really wrapped up into this being a real indication of, like, okay, now I can believe the culture has changed and ownership does the right thing all the time. You know, this is a culture that's been cured of Snyder, Sam 21, okay? It's been cured of Snyder. We've already seen that in the coming up on 2 years that they've owned the team. They just had their most successful season in 34 seasons. And no season that they had over the last 34 comes close to the season they had last year. I think they'll get it done. I do. I think they'll get it done. I think, you know, you've got really smart people. You've got good people. You've got empathetic people, people who are as smart from an EQ standpoint as they are an IQ standpoint. Snyder didn't have either. He's important to this team. They're trying to win the Super Bowl in this upcoming season. And Terry is such a good guy. And it certainly seems, from the outside looking in, would love to continue to be a part of this with Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury as well. I think they get it done. I think it comes in somewhere around 30 for 3 years. Somewhere around there. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
The Oklahoma City Thunder defeated the Indiana Pacers last night in Game 7 by a score of 103-91. Tyrese Halliburton went down with what appeared to be an Achilles injury midway through the first quarter. The Pacers kept their foot on the gas all the way to halftime, and then the Thunder came out swinging with 18 points off turnovers and outscoring the Pacers 34-20, and that was all she wrote. The Oklahoma City Thunder are your NBA champions, and surprise, surprise, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander wins the Finals MVP. The Thunder are the second youngest NBA champion in the last 7 years, and they become the fourth team in NBA history to record 84 wins in a season. Over the weekend, the LSU Tigers win the College World Series over Coastal Carolina with a two-game sweep. This is LSU's second title in 3 years. Kevin Durant was traded to the Houston Rockets in exchange for Jalen Green, Dylan Brooks, the number 10 overall pick, and 5 second-round picks. And just now, the Anaheim Ducks traded Trevor Zegras to the Philadelphia Flyers in exchange for Ryan Pelig, the 45th overall pick, and a 2026 fourth. The Nats, they fall to the Dodgers yesterday 13-7. The game got so out of hand that Kike Hernandez had to come in to pitch for the Dodgers in the ninth inning. Nathaniel Lowe hit that lone home run for the Nats. They continue their West Coast road trip tonight and will take on the Padres. First pitch at 9:40, and Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave at 9:10. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1, and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The National Weather Service issued an extreme heat warning for today and tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., with peak heat index values near 110, perhaps rising to 115. I know I've seen excessive heat warnings before. I don't know that I've ever seen an extreme heat warning. That does not sound good. It is brutal out there. Stay hydrated. Don't go outside. I was actually planning on perhaps, I was thinking about it. I told you this earlier. I was like, I might go hit some golf balls today. I don't think I'm going to do that now.
No.
Maybe after 9 o'clock when it gets dark.
There you go.
By the way, we are now starting, our days are now starting to get shorter because we just reached the beginning of summer, the longest day. But, God, it is hot.
You got a range open past 9?
No.
Okay, I was going to say. Damn.
No, it's not.
Good for you.
The temperature right now, it looks like it's 96 with heat index of 106.
Yeah, baby.
Today, climbing to 101 overall. Real temperature tomorrow, 102. This is a legit heat wave, people. Be careful. Back tomorrow. Chris is next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.